Hi, I'm Susie Larson. Here's the podcast from Middays with Susie Larson. Enjoy the conversation. It's only just a matter of. Welcome to Middays. I'm Susie Larson. So honored to get to spend this time with you. In fact, I look forward to bringing you conversations every single day that hopefully inspire you in your faith walk, that deepen your understanding of God's Word, and that heightens your awareness of His very real presence in your life. So here's a question for you. What would it look like? What would have to change in your life to put Jesus over everything, where there was nothing in your life competing with Jesus' first place in your life? Does the thought scare you? If it does, you might want to ask yourself why it scares you, because God is good. His promises are true. And when we put Jesus over everything, everything else falls into place. Well, we have got an important show for you today. In her book, Jesus Over Everything, Uncomplicating the Daily Struggle to Put Jesus First, my friend Lisa Whittle holds nothing back. She tackles everything from Christian celebrity to the prosperity gospel, even to the point she put herself on a one-year shopping fast. We'll talk about that. Buckle up. We are in for a powerful show. We'll get her on here in just a moment. A couple quick announcements. One is we've got our Northwestern Christian Writers Conference coming up in July, but we're talking about now. So for the month of February, registration is off 10%. So we want to see you there. Our keynotes are Dr. Alicia Britt Scholey, who's brilliant and amazing, Karen Kingsbury, and then we're bringing in A-level, I'm not kidding you, editors, agents, and experts in the field. If you have even a remote dream to be published, if you want to take next steps to see, is this for you? Or maybe you've already got a book or two under your belt. This is a great place to network, and we would love to see you. And you got to know, my friend Lisa, who's my guest today, will also be here as a faculty member. So let me tell you about her. Oh, by the way, if you need more information on the conference, look up NorthwesternChristianWritersConference.com. All right. Lisa Whittle's author of 7 books, and her wit and bold bottom line approach has made her a sought-after Bible teacher. She's the founder of Ministry Strong and the popular Jesus Over Everything podcast. Her love runs deep to see people pursue Jesus for life, grow deep roots of faith, and walk strong in a world that so often seems to have gone crazy. Lisa, welcome back to the program. I always appreciate you.
Oh, I am so excited to be with you as always, Susie.
I love our conversations, and we love to start every day, Lisa, talking scripture, and I know you love to spend time with God and in His Word. Where have you been camping these days?
You know, lately in my life, I have been going through a lot of change. And, you know, my dad passed away almost 3 years ago. My mom got remarried about a year after he passed and moved away. And then we're in a really interesting season with kids and they're transitioning into more adulthood. There's been a lot of change. And I think one of the verses that has continue to compel me is a verse I learned as a child, which is Hebrews 13:8, Jesus Christ is the same yesterday, today, and forever. And I love that verse, Susie, because I need it. I need the consistency of the Lord. And it's been one that daily has resonated with me because I've realized how much I need His parenting. And it's just been a really interesting season for me in that way.
Wow, I really appreciate that. And friends, I forgot to mention, thanks to Thomas Nelson, we have 6 copies of Lisa's book. Jesus wrote it through Lisa. So, hey,
yeah.
It is an amazing book. Jesus Over Everything, Uncomplicating the Daily Struggle to Put Jesus First. It's raw, it's honest, it's gritty, it's powerful. 6 copies. You can text the word book to 877-933-2484. So I know this has been a message long in the making for you, Lisa. So talk about how the topic of Jesus Over Everything was first born in your heart.
Oh man, Susie, it really has been. I think when I look back, it's been a message that, boy, he's been working out on me for probably years, really. You know, priority order. I don't know who's listening that maybe putting Jesus first comes easy to them, but for me, it comes very, very difficult and through tears and hard-fought surrender. And so I've often said, you know, I'm probably not God's toughest case, but I'm definitely in the top 5. So for me, you know, it's been just a lot of, like, you know, trying to make my own life work my way and further complicating it because of it. and having lots of scars from my own way of doing things and things that mimic the true joy and fulfillment of the right priority of Jesus in first place. And so it's just been a process. It's really been a process. I don't think I couldn't have verbalized, oh, this has been a process of Jesus over everything. And it's still goals for me. It's not like I have it down. I just think I have new language and I'm more aware. And that's really what I hoped to do in the book, was to just bring a new awareness and a new language for us to let us know, first of all, this is the way that it's set up to work by the creator of the system of order. And so this is the only way our life will work. And then just to let us know we can live this kind of life. Like, he wouldn't have asked us to do it if it wasn't possible. So it's just been a process, Susie, you know, like anything else.
What did he go after first in you when you decided, I want to put Jesus first and foremost, I want to seek him first? What did he go after? And, you know, he just does that. He puts his finger on something in our lives. And I often say, friends, you know, enemy is all about condemnation. Jesus is always about the invitation. But it is painful when he starts to shine the light. So what did he go after in you first?
Oh, man. You know, I think, well, one of the things that he went after was my desire to shop. I think it's one of those things that I, you know, I looked at it as fairly harmless because I didn't put us in debt. There weren't like a lot of glaring signs that I was in trouble. So I didn't put us in debt, didn't rack up a lot of credit cards. I didn't really have anyone saying, you know, boy, you shop too much or whatever. But as I talk about in chapter one, as you know, I have an incident where I have a girlfriend come over and she comes into my closet and she just makes a passing comment about how many clothes I have. And it's like I knew I had a lot of clothes, but yet it didn't feel so egregious that I just had so many clothes. But it was like God had been, you know, making me aware little by little of times that I use what I call the substitute savior of a debit card and swipe that debit card in moments that I felt needy in some way, either, you know, a moment that was bad or, you know, a moment that I felt like I there was a hole there and I just needed something to fill it. You know, shopping was kind of a go-to for me. And I knew it. I think we innately know things that we use to plug the holes. I think we innately know things that are substitute saviors in those moments. We know, but we don't want to admit it. And if we can get an excuse for it, we will take it. You know, so if we can look around and we think, oh, we don't put ourselves into debt. And by the way, people will let us off the hook, you know, because girls love to shop or whatever the case may be. And so I had plenty of those passes given to me. But it really
and you bought things on sale, Lisa. I'm just sorry to interrupt, but it's like you know, you can see all the justifications. But I love that God was poking at you, and you start to listen. What was it like then to go for a full year without shopping?
Oh man, well, I don't want to say it was easy because it wasn't, and especially in the beginning, it wasn't. I think any time that we, you know, detox from something that's been a go-to, it is certainly in the beginning much harder. And I think, so for me, it was this thing of I had to set some real strict boundaries for myself. And I have to say, Susie, in the beginning, you know, I didn't set out to do it for a year. I actually don't even say this in the book, but I wanted to just accomplish it for a month. Our church was going on a fast. I decided I was going to do this for a month. And then after a month, the Lord said, "You're not done." And we just kept going. And so I guess what I also want to encourage is that if someone feels like something, it feels hard or that feels like, wow, a year shopping fast, that's daunting. What I would say is, you know, sometimes we just need to start and let God change us along the way, because that is what happens with transformation so often. And it was hard. I didn't buy things for myself, clothing, things for my house. Those were the two areas that were really hard for me. So people say, did you buy shampoo? Did you buy, you know, toothpaste? Well, yes, I did buy those things because people would not appreciate it if I didn't brush my teeth. Those weren't places of overindulgence for me, right? I didn't go to those things when I was feeling, you know, needy or whatever. So, yeah, I set some guidelines, and I still live by guidelines, Susie, because I think that our greatest success is when we know the things that can trip us up and we continue to live by some guidelines for ourselves. So it certainly was a moment in my life that profoundly changed me.
You know, and it's one thing to lay something down, just to lay it down for the sake of self-denial, but it's a whole other thing to be turning around so you have more space, room to pursue God. And that's really what you're talking about. And, you know, for some, it might be your nighttime binge on Netflix or excessive time on Facebook, or it's different for all of us. I seem to remember C.S. Lewis writing something about, a woman who needs her morning toast. And so she asks for so little, but since she asks for so little, she has to have that toast. And he says, you know, we all have these things where we make accommodations for, we're not very flexible about, and as you say, we all kind of know what those things are. This isn't about rigid religion. It is really about a holy invitation. When we come back, we're going to tackle your chapter about the land of overs, over-apologizing, over-explaining. We touched on overindulgence. We might revisit that as well. Did I say this is a fantastic book? Friends, it really is. This is one of those that'll mess with you, and I love. Those are my favorite kinds. Talking to my friend Lisa Whittle, her book is Jesus Over Everything, Uncomplicating the Daily Struggle to Put Jesus First. If I had 20 copies, I'd give them away, all of them, today. We got six, though. You can text the word book to 877-933-2484. If you got a question, you need to send that in a separate text. And we will be back in a minute. Middays. I'm Suzy Larson talking to my friend Lisa Whittle, who's written a really amazing book. She's just a great writer, period. The content, though, is just over the top. Title of the book, Jesus Over Everything, Uncomplicating the Daily Struggle to Put Jesus First. As I told you, I love books that mess with us. I mean, who needs just vanilla, right? This book will stir you up. It'll call you up. We've got six copies, thanks to Thomas Nelson. So just text the word book to get in the drawing, 877-933-2484. And Lisa says, don't assume that just because your life isn't working, you need a whole different life. Sometimes you just need God to finally run yours. And she says, a Jesus over everything lifestyle is the understanding that the priority of Jesus brings order to the chaos of our lives. It's a job only God is big enough and able to do. I thought it was so interesting, Lisa, how you identified some of the common denominators in the hearts of people you meet. I'm going to read all four and just have you speak to these a little bit at a time. I apologize for everything. I overbook myself because I don't want to let people down. I get in my head and go down so many negative mental roads. I constantly feel the need to explain myself. Okay, first one, I apologize for everything. I thought it was fascinating that you had a young volunteer who actually, here, you're a seasoned person in the ministry, but she had something to say to you about this.
She kind of confronted me and said, she'd been listening to me talk to someone about my ministry and just kind of sitting there observing, eavesdropping. And she said, when that person left to go to the restroom, she said, you apologize for your ministry. And I said, what do you mean? I certainly do not, kind of taken aback by this. And she said, yes, you do. And there was another woman that was with us who was older than me. And she said, you do, you apologize for your ministry. And I have to tell you, Susie, I didn't ever think of it in those terms. I didn't ever think I did it, first of all, but it really kind of put me in check. And I can't say that right then and there I thought, oh, yes, I do. I do that. I told you I'm stubborn. So it took me a little while to realize that I actually do that. I apologize for my ministry. And I go into, as you know, in the book, for ways through the years I've apologized by minimizing maybe an accomplishment, or diminishing something that God had done in my life, or just in some way dumbing down something that had happened that was really important to me, because I just didn't want to make someone else uncomfortable, or I didn't want someone to think that I thought I was better than I was, or whatever the case may be. And it really wasn't humility. It was actually just kind of sort of this false humility. And so I realized that at a certain point in my life.
I got to read this. You said, I realized that in so many ways, my apologizing was not only unnecessary, but it was self-serving. It was not humble. It was humiliating. It lifted no one, and it was not about God. And you're talking your ministry, but many people, if they're blessed with something, if they keep kind of self-deprecating in a way, it does actually start to draw attention to yourself and you feel guilty. It's like you have blessing guilt, and surely there's a better way to steward. So what do you say to the person who is constantly apologizing?
Well, I say to reserve the apologies for when they are real and when they are necessary. And I also want to say, Susie, and you're so right, this has nothing to do with, you know, someone who's in a certain ministry or has a certain job or whatever. This is something that a lot of us can get into for a lot of reasons. And another thing that we do is we apologize for someone. We, you know, take on that role of apologizing for them when it's not our apology to make. And I think that's a way that we sort of interfere in God's business as well. And so these are things that I just really wanted to open our eyes to, because what happens is, and the whole point of talking about the deadly overs, whether it be over-apologizing or any of the others we're going to get into here, the whole reason to talk about this is because it's our way of sort of overcompensating for a moment that feels out of control or a relationship that feels out of control. And what happens in the process, if anybody has ever experienced this, we know that it actually complicates it more. It complicates the relationship more. It makes us feel worse. It makes everything over time feel worse, because people sense when we are giving false apologies or apologies that we don't really mean. And then it creates sort of this distrust in the relationship, among other things.
Yeah. I remember when I was with some women in our community who I knew weren't believers, and I apologized for something, some blessing in my life or something, and I felt the inner wince of the Holy Spirit. Like, my self-deprecating was not honoring to God at all, and I felt it. And I was trying to just, as you say, dumb it down. And talk, if you would, about what a mindset might look like for the person who maybe over-apologizes for whatever reason to put Jesus first. What thought can they put in their mind or in their heart to go, Lord, I'm going to suspend this. I'm not going to do this, and I'm going to honor you above else. What advice would you have?
I would tell them I take my own advice, because I know it's difficult, and in that moment we just want to manage it, but really it is about, do I trust Jesus enough to have this situation, to have this moment, to have me, that he will have me, whether this relationship goes awry, whether this other person thinks something of me, because a lot of times these behaviors of over whatever it is are because we want to manage our own PR, right? We want people to love us more, to like us more, to understand us more. And it really is about putting Jesus over that relationship, putting Jesus over our own need to control this situation or, you know, manage this relationship, because he can do it better.
Yeah,
and those kinds of things are really what it, at the core, what it's about.
And friend, if you're listening and you have that tendency either to over apologize or even over explain, Lisa writes more about that in the book. And let's talk about overworking. I thought it was interesting. You said Priscilla Shire, I don't know if you saw a tweet or something, but she wrote that overwork is unbelief. I've been saying for years, rest is an act of faith and an act of war against the enemy of our soul. But it's not often talked about, I'd say. So say more, if you would, about the idea of overworking is really, you're not putting Jesus first when you're overworking. Say more.
Yeah, this is a tough one, Susie. I mean, you know, I enjoy work. And so, you know, this is hard, because I like production. I like to be in a state of production. It fuels me. I enjoy it. I'm high capacity. So this is a tough one for me. I mean, if I'm honest, all of the deadly overs have affected me at one point or another. And, you know, that's where a lot of this comes from. Overwork being unbelief, that just hit me so hard. I thought, is it unbelief? And I really pulled that apart. And I do believe that's true on a level, because, you know, do we believe that Jesus is enough? Do we believe that he provides enough? Now, obviously, this is not to say we shouldn't work, clearly, but that's what the point of the overs is. It's overdoing something. It's not working. It's overworking to the point where people in our life are telling us, like, you are working too much. You know, you are now about production, and the production has become more important than maybe sanctification, right? Maybe more than, it's become more important than family. It's become, you know, the thing that you go to when you feel like your life is not in the control you want. And you turn to work because it somehow makes you feel like you're more worthy or whatever the case may be. And lots of us do this. Lots of us do this. And, you know, the identity piece is huge in our work. And so it's something very important to look at because it complicates our lives. If we have been an overworker, if we're notoriously overworking in our life, we know that it complicates a lot of things. It complicates relationships. It complicates our own identity because work is very fickle too. I mean, it can be, you know, we can lose jobs without our permission, even if we work so, so hard and we've worked our whole life for something. So these things are very important to understand where we need to put them under, which is under Jesus in our life.
You know, I've heard this scenario many times in my travels, traveling around speaking. I'm thinking you may have as well, but the scenario of a Christian couple where one overworks and so the other overindulges in media of some kind. So let's say the wife is overworking and the husband is lost in video games or flipping it over. The husband overworks and the wife is just lost in Netflix and Facebook and Instagram. And I'm not making judgments here. I'm just saying I've heard this scenario over and over again. I'm looking at my clock, about a minute and a half. But I want you to cast a vision because I think when these two people come together to go, God has something more for me, I'm going to lay this excess down and we're together going to seek you first. Miracles could literally happen in that marriage, couldn't they?
You're so right, Susie. I mean, it really is the way that it works and comes together. You know, listen, I mean, he's in all things, he's over all things, and in him all things hold together. I mean, we know that Netflix does not hold us together, Facebook does not hold us together, and working harder does not hold us together. Because if it were so, those things would have already held us together. And for that couple, for any of us, to really put those things in priority order where Jesus is at the top, I suggest that it is what A.W. Tozer says, which is when you put Jesus in his rightful place, 1,000 problems are solved. And that is what Jesus over everything is really all about. It is not this strict set of rules. It really is about, do you want your life to work? Do you want it to be less complicated? Then put Jesus over everything. And that's how it will work.
I wonder what we're afraid of. We're going to pause here for the break, but talk on the other side about the fear, because when we start messing with some of our default comforts, we get a little afraid, like, what's this going to cost me? But what's it costing us not to put Jesus first? We're just going to tackle that fear thing, and then we'll talk about your chapter, Love Over Judgment. Talking to Lisa Whittle, her book is Jesus Over Everything, Uncomplicating the Daily Struggle to Put Jesus First. And I want you to hear, this is not obligation. This is not religion. This is an invitation. It's relationship. And things start to fall into place when Jesus gets first place. We've got 6 copies. We'd love to get some into your hands. Text the word book to 877-933-2484. More with Lisa Whittle in a moment. Amazing song play out. You know, last 2 bumpers are from local artists. We've got some pretty amazing songwriters here in the Twin Cities. I am talking to my friend Lisa Whittle. Her book is Jesus Over Everything, Uncomplicating the Daily Struggle to Put Jesus First. You've got 6 copies. This dear listener, Amy, writes in, many of the broadcasts you do, I try to get the book. But today, I got in my car and I hear a familiar voice talking with you. I don't need to ask for Lisa's book this time. I'm reading it early as a part of her launch team. Amazing book, she says. So, Amy, aww, thanks for tuning in today. That's fantastic. So before the break, Lisa, we were talking about the fear. Like, you know, when we start talking about some of these indulgences, our kind of faux comforts that we all make accommodations for, and especially you can justify them all day long if they're not costing anybody else anything. But you sort of know they're your thing, and God's kind of Hey, can you loosen the white knuckle grip there? When we start to talk about those things and people get a little stirred up, I think fear is part of that equation. Speak to the fear of putting Jesus over everything.
Well, the fear is real. I mean, it's real. And I think it is real, and yet it is also a tactic of the enemy to make us believe that what we know now is better than what Jesus has for us, which is such a lie. But if he can keep us believing that lie, and further, if he can keep us from actually taking just one step in the process of trying this out, just trying it out to live the Jesus over everything lifestyle, if he can do that, if he can keep us from that, then we won't know things that we cannot unknow about how much better our life will work. Now, will our life be perfect? No, because we're not to the perfect life yet, which is heaven. But it is the way that the creator of the system of order set it up, that he would be in first spot. And so the fear is real. We are human. It is also being sold to us constantly by the father of lies. Yeah. And who doesn't want us to live the better life. And so I'm telling you, Susie, I mean, I'm just compelled by my love for the body of Christ that we would be no longer tied up in so many complications that keep us from living abundantly and that keep us from living with our gifts and the things that God has given us to do to influence the world. And so that's why I wanted to make this as simple as possible, because I'm a very simple thinker, and I don't need anything complicated, because I don't do well with complication, and I don't do well with a lot of heavy to-dos. And so I wanted to boil this down as simple as I knew how to boil it. And so I want to speak to that fear and say, I get it. I'm afraid too, but the reality is that God would not call us to live this kind of life if he would not empower us to be able to do it. Yeah. And the choices that we make with these 8 statements of choice that are in the book are things that we do every day anyway. We can choose to be honest or hide. And that's a choice we get to make every day. And so I hope that in the book I make a compelling case for why honesty is better. And those are the things that we have the Spirit mm-hmm. of God in us to be able to do.
Yeah, someone once said a known captivity. We prefer a known captivity to an unknown freedom. And I think this is why fasting is so powerful and important. And it doesn't always have to be food. If there is, you know, if you have just a default that you just sort of know, and God's saying, if you would accept the invitation, if you just lay that down for a bit and spend some time seeking me. I'm telling you, Lisa, every single time I've put something down, not things that aren't even sinful in themselves, just maybe a different use of time for the purpose of seeking God, I experience him and think, what in the world is better than this? I want people to respond to the invitation of the Lord. I had a friend who last year fasted from snarky comments, from judgments, and she said, just in my head, she said she was raised in a pretty critical home, so the default thing for her was to just, you know, not always speak them, but to think them. But sometimes, you know, what's in your head does come out of your mouth. But she said the Lord put her on a strict fast for a month. Anything negative, anything judgmental. And she said it was one of the most humbling but sacred times of her life. And I want to just segue to your chapter titled Love Over Judgment. Speak to the whole idea of love over judgment.
Well, and I want to say too, Susie, you're so right that most of us in this pace of the world, we just don't stop long enough to let God do anything in us. And I want to just compel us to just say, how's your life working right now? I mean, is your life really working right now for most of us? Even if it's, you know, even if we're having an okay day, we know that our life could work better. And so that is the way that the whole laying it down and Jesus over everything process really works. And sometimes a bad reason to start is a reason enough. Like, God can work with that. You know, I was embarrassed into my shopping fast, and he still accepted my meager start. And so I would just say to people, you know, if today you even have a desire to love over judge and you don't even know how to do that perfectly, that's okay. You know, that's what I love about Jesus. He's not snobby to our meager starts. He accepts that heart desire love over judgment. You know, it's really even hard to write about love, Susie. You know that. You're a writer. Mm-hmm. It's difficult to even put that into words. So many people have written about it. I only know what I know about love, and that is that, the things that make me feel safe make me feel loved, and I know that the things that I fear are the things that I often judge. And, you know, judgment is easier. I think that we judge things that we fear, and we want to easily get rid of them like a hot potato in our hand. But love is what brings prodigals home. It's what changes our lives. I mean, if you just think about people that have invested in your life in some way, even invested with a kind word when everyone else around you maybe that day wasn't kind, it's what's made you sit up and take notice and say, whoever they are, whatever they're about, I'm going to listen to them. You might not listen to everybody else around you, but you're going to listen to them. And that's the hope of reaching people for the gospel of Jesus Christ, is that people are endeared to the love that we have inside. And so I think the reason why people are afraid of this as believers is, you know, a lot of us with a strong moral compass say, well, I don't want my convictions to go out the window. And if I love people, like, I don't know how to do that. We need the Spirit to let us know how to hold fast to our convictions while we also love people. But that is interesting, because love in and of itself is a conviction. We should hold that as a conviction, yeah, as well. So, mm-hmm. That chapter is all kind of about that.
Jesus did it, and he wasn't afraid of associations. And we do have to walk carefully. We do have to walk wisely. But I think we are in such a place of such a fear of man. We're afraid to love anybody who thinks different than we do. And we got to break free from that somehow, to go, if I walk in the fear of the Lord and God knows my heart and his word abides in me, I'm going to love who he brings across my path, and I'm going to trust him to defend my honor. I just think we need a little bit more grit in this day, as far as, because it is a conviction, and it's going to look different than just towing the company line, you know?
Right, right. And we need to be people of the word, Susie, so that we know what our convictions are, and we stand, yep, in those convictions, and, yep, we're able to be, you know. And so I think sometimes the reason we fear it is because we deep down know, man, I don't really know what I believe. And so that's why those core things are so important for us as believers.
Well, in your chapter on holiness, you talk about drinking and your college years. And just to talk, if you would, about that part of your story and how Jesus over everything impacted some of those convictions.
Well, I didn't want to talk about drinking. I did not want to talk about alcohol at all. And I told the Lord that, but he didn't budge.
Yeah,
I really did not want to talk about this at all. This is such a polarizing subject. But here's, I did it for two reasons. Number one, the Lord told me to. And so obedience was a huge factor in it. I would say 99%. The other reason why I did it, Susie, is because I get messages about this from people asking me to speak into it, because wherever you stand on this issue, as you're listening, that's not what the chapter is about. That's not what I'm addressing in this chapter. What I think we can't ignore is that, like Netflix and like our phone usage and like anything else, the overindulgence of alcohol is just another thing on the list that we have to be willing to look at as a potential freedom that we're enjoying that is actually enslaving us. And that is the point of the whole chapter. Because as I was telling the Lord, I didn't want to talk about this because I knew that I might get possible emails. I might get people that would misconstrue what I was actually saying. I might get people who might want to make me into their poster child, either way, for or against, whatever. The Lord really spoke to my heart and said, you ought to put everything on the table. And if there's something you're not willing to put on the table, then there's a problem. And so we just talked about it. I'm talking about it in the book. I talk about my college years. I talk about the fact that alcohol never brought me anything good, my overuse of it, my liberal indulgence of it. And, you know, it was attached to a lot of sinful memories. Every sinful memory I can think of in college, whether it be, you know, things that I did that compromised me physically, relationships, lying, all kinds of things were always attached to a decision that I made that involved drinking alcohol. And so for me, I just made a choice that I wanted complete consecration to the Lord in this area. I wanted to be clear-minded in all ways. And so really, I mean, since college, I've probably had 20 drinks in my life. So it really is not about whether alcohol is right or wrong, not at all. It's about what in our life, whoever you are, whatever you are, you know, God may be speaking to you about, is a freedom that you might be entitled to, that you might be enjoying, that actually could end up enslaving you. And that's something that we have to be willing to look at. And I suggest that holiness is the greatest freedom we'll ever have, because as we submit to the Lord and His holiness, He provides for us freedoms like we have never known in our entire life.
I think you did a brilliant job unpacking that, and I'm grateful you addressed it. And I want to read a couple of excerpts here before we take our last break. Lisa writes, it's important how we view and as a result make a choice for holiness. It's not about rules. Listen, it's about spiritual relinquishment. Is there something in your life God's saying, would you just, can I have that so you can lay hold of more of me? He's always better. He's just always worth it. And the other thing Lisa writes is this. The irony of the Christian faith is that we live a humanly free will, free choice life. And yet, we are called to simultaneously live a spiritual life of complete dependence. I want you to hear that again before we break. The irony of the Christian faith is that we live a humanly free will, free choice life. And yet, we are called to simultaneously live a life of complete dependence. So, what about spiritual relinquishment? I would love for you to chime into the conversation. Is there something the Lord's asking you to let go of so you can lay hold of more of Him? I won't say your name if you just want to chime into the conversation. If you want in on the drawing, that's a separate text. Text the word book to 877-933-2484. We're going to come back and talk about the celebrity culture, service over spotlight. And Lisa's going to tell a pretty compelling story, if she will, about her dad and just his story, how his story impacted hers. Talking to Lisa Whittle, her book, Jesus Over Everything, Uncomplicating the Daily Struggle to Put Jesus First. Have I said this is a fantastic book yet? It is. Thomas Nelson gave us 6 copies. Thank you, Thomas Nelson. Text the word book to 877-933-2484. We'll be back in a minute. You're tuning into Middays. I'm Susie Larson talking to my friend Lisa Whittle, who's written a really brilliant book titled Jesus Over Everything, Uncomplicating the Daily Struggle to Put Jesus First. So grateful we've got 6 copies to give away. If you want in on the drawing, just text the word book to 877-933-2484. And Lisa, I love this. You said, underlying the reason we run to the spotlight more than we do to service are the lies we believe about it, making it preferable, mostly thanks to the world's influence. We think it's easier, feels better, equals success, and gets you more adoring friends. But none of these things are actually true. Talk a bit more about the, especially what we've addressed it on the show quite a bit, but still, Christian celebrity and preferring spotlight over just humble service.
Well, yeah, it's a culture that I think that we fight. It's a reality. You know, we're drawn to voices that inspire us, and God is using people, and certainly social media makes those things really at our fingertips. And, you know, I'm a big proponent of people using their gifts clearly, and sometimes that's going to be in a spotlighted capacity. But where we get into trouble is the pedestal of putting the idea of on the pedestal or people on the pedestal, and the thought that the spotlight is what's important, that is the litmus test by which we measure ourselves, measure, you know, people, and measure where God is working. Yeah, mm-hmm. The favor of God, where God is working in this world. And it's just a lie. It's a lie that bigger is better. It's a lie that God favors people in the spotlight, or that He created people more special. I think we have plenty of proof in the Word, in the Bible, that that is untrue. That, you know, we have the passage in Acts where it talks about Peter and John, that they were ordinary men with no special training. I think we know that these things are true. But I also think that just because culture is so loud and we have the measurement of numbers, or we have the measurement of, you know, now social media followers or whatever the case may be. I just do believe and know that also according to the Word, which is where I base all of my standard and belief system, that God has used and does use service to change us into the people we really want to be. And I know that from my own experience, that any time I have been praying for humility and life change and just the things that I've wanted so desperately to read in a book or, you know, pray myself into, and certainly the Lord has helped me do that, but the way that He's helped me the very most is to give me on-the-job training through serving someone. And typically in more of a quiet capacity, I found. So I'm not saying that sometimes we won't be in the spotlight. That might happen. I'm saying that when our heart craves that over service that might not be noticed or known, that we get into some trouble. And that is when we're putting our needs and to be known and noticed over the way of the kingdom of God.
Yeah. And I would say that happens all the time in the church, and it may not just happen for those who crave the spotlight. It could be those who maybe serve behind the scenes, but it's quid pro quo. You know, I'll do this, but I better get a thanks from my pastor. I'll do this, and I better get some kind of status or at least a plastic name tag. And I'm not making light of it. I'm just saying God knows the motivations of our heart. So it'd be easy to go, well, that's not me because I don't even crave the spotlight. I'm an introvert. But when we have this, if I do this, I'll get that, versus serving as unto Christ, we just need to look at it. And, you know, Lisa, in the book, you talk about a time when you met with your counselor and you told her that you were unimpressible. And she probed a bit deeper and she kind of poked at you, which I loved. I loved it. She didn't let you off the hook so much. But talk, if you would, about just the idea of what that unearthed. And just if you don't mind, as much as you're able to share the story about your dad.
Yeah, you're talking about in the chapter, Steady Over Hype, I think. It's true. I went to meet with my counselor, and we were talking, and I said, you know, I'm unimpressible. And it came about because I've been watching America's Got Talent with my kids. And, you know, I think somebody did this crazy, you know, talented act, and I was kind of like, you know, it's okay. And my kids were like, Mom, you're unimpressible. You cannot be impressed. And they weren't saying it in a very, they weren't impressed by the fact I wasn't impressed. We'll put it that way. They were saying it like, you know, why can't you enjoy this really? And I was talking to the counselor about that, and gosh, I feel emotional about this. I feel like I'm going to cry. I just spoke to the counselor and I said, you know, I think it's because I feel like it's a trick. I feel like that, you know, it's not real. What I'm seeing, someone's making me believe something that's not real. It's a trick. And it really, as we dug into it more, we discovered that, you know, because my father was this pastor of this very large church and really had kind of gotten into a real, you know, performance mode, which happens a lot when we are in ministry sometimes and just kind of serving the Lord, but really doing the Lord's work and sometimes forgetting about the heart of the matter. You know, there were just times that I got very jaded by that process, and I got very jaded by church people who loved us and put my father up on a pedestal. But when he had a very large ministry crash, and he lost his church, and we lost our sort of identity as this pastor's family in the town, then they didn't have anything to do with us anymore. And he was sort of like the town pariah and all these things, you know. It was very difficult for me, Susie. And so for me, I realized this was the source of unraveling, being impressed by really anything. And the bad news was it was kind of the idea that I'm not able to really be super impressed by anything. But the good news was that from that place, I became more and more impressed with Jesus and less impressed by other people. And so I've had to learn through the years the balance of loving people and just appreciating their gifts, but really only being impressed by Jesus. And so I think that's the encouragement there is not being jaded, but being really impressed with the Lord and holding the other things kind of loosely as we are steady in our walk with Him.
That is really an important tension, Lisa, because jaded or cynical because you've seen too much is scary. You get to that place, it will damage your soul. It will skew your perspective because you'll see things that actually aren't even there. I know someone who worked behind the scenes in the Christian music world and is still very cynical because saw too much hype, too much celebrityism, too much diva attitude. And now he's suspect of things that are actually genuinely wonderfully good. So maybe say a word, if you could, to that person who's still sitting in the place of cynic, but God wants to invite them to be, you know, to be glory in God's glory, but still kind of believe the best about other people. It's just better for your soul. And again, it goes back to love over judgment, actually.
Susie, you said it so beautifully. You're right. I've been the cynic. I've been the cynic. I've been the jaded. I've been the wounded. And I know that place, it feels like a place of self-protection. We might even use words like, you know, well, I just got discernment in this. Or, you know, we might even just say, well, I've just seen too much. The reality is there are beautiful things in life. And there are people who truly love the Lord. And there are times that we get hurt in a church situation or in a ministry situation or by a family member who, you know, preaches Jesus in their, you know, speech every day, and then they hurt us because maybe they live a different way. You know, we're all sinners and none of us are perfect. And boy, if perfection is a litmus test, I'm in huge trouble. So I would just encourage them to really just run after Jesus and love Him for all the ways He's consistent and love Him for all of the perfection that He is, because I tell you, it just drives me to love Him more because of the way He never lets me down. Mm-hmm. But also ask Him to just really soften your heart. And doesn't mean that, you know, you give away your trust to everybody. I'm not asking for that, but that He would let you see with some childlike wonder of the beautiful things that still happen. And I think some of that takes a little bit of time, but I do believe that there's so much goodness in the world that He wants us to behold. And you're right, it just changes us if we don't allow that goodness to come in.
Mm. And there's something so powerful, supernatural, really. When we put Jesus over everything, He tends to those wounds in our soul. He's so brilliant in the way that He leads us and unearths things and lets them come to the surface and then speaks to those things. But again, I believe there's so many Christians, Lisa, that are numbing out because they don't want to feel, but then they're not living the fullness of life. Mm. Cast a vision. We got just about a minute left. And we're, by the way, friends, we're keeping Lisa on for some bonus content for you podcast listeners. So once the live show is over, we're going to talk for a few more minutes. So I hope you'll catch the bonus content. But just cast a vision for what it looks like to put Jesus over everything. You got about 45 seconds.
Oh, Jesus over everything is the way that our life will work. If you're tired of the complications, if you're tired of trying to, you know, manufacture the fulfillment on your own, the way that He set it up to be, according to Colossians 1, is the way that our life will work. And there is no other way that it will work in the same way. And so I want this life for you. I want this life for us. And what He says is true, and what He promises will be fulfilled, and we can trust Him. Mm-hmm. I am excited for us to take this journey. I really am.
Lisa, you've done such a great job on the book. Lisa Whittle, friends, and her book is titled Jesus Over Everything. We'll leave the drawing open for another 10, 15 minutes, so feel free to enter. You've got a little bit of time. Text the word book to 877-933-2484. If you only listen to the live show, never the podcast, maybe you need to subscribe, because we're going to have some bonus material for you. We'll meet you back here next time. Thanks for listening to this conversation from Middays with Susie Larson. These podcasts are available because of listener support. You can become a supporter now at myfaithradio.com. And thanks for sharing this audio link to spread the good news of the gospel and to grow the impact of the show. Also, if you would, take a moment to subscribe to the podcast today at Apple Podcasts or your favorite podcast player. And never miss a show.